Hello, everyone. This is Giulio Coraggio, location head of the Department of Intellectual Property and Technology at DLA Piper in Italy. This is the podcast Diritto al Digitale, and I'm here with my colleague Elena Varese, and we are delighted to have as a special guest Daniela Paletti. Daniela is head of Legal Europe at Condé Nast. Daniela, thank you very much for accepting our invite. It's real a pleasure to have you here with us.
Hi, Giulio and Elena. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast. It's really a pleasure to speak with you. So thank you so much for this.
So, Daniela, normally we start our podcast with a bit of the journey of our guests. Elena, do you want to address the first question?
Yes. So, as a first question, I'm curious to know a little bit more about your journey to become head of legal at Condé Nast. I think it's a fascinating story because we share a bit of the start of this story. So, please.
Yeah, I joined Condé Nast more than 10 years ago so far because it was 2012. And I'm coming from private practice, so I decided to change my life and to stay in the opposite side. I was hired at that time with the task to set up and organize the legal function in Italy, because at that time there was no in-house function at Condé Nast in Italy. So my role at that time was start to set up the process, start working with the business and educating the business in dealing with in-house counsel, because it was really new for them. It was challenging at the beginning because, of course, they were not used to talk with lawyers. So educating them in understanding that I was here to support them. I was, first of all, a partner for the business, being there for supporting them in achieving their goals. And then in 2021, Condé Nast went through a big transformation because it became a more global company. And so my general counsel proposed me to join this new role as head of legal for Europe. So it means that now I'm responsible not only for Italy, but also for France, Germany, and Spain. It was also a new challenge because it was like starting from the scratch, because in the other market there were no legal functions. So it is true that when I joined this new role, there was also the global team supporting me, a more structured legal function based in London and in New York. But at the same time, the other European markets were not used as well to deal with the in-house lawyer. And also, I think it was different in the sense that I have started to deal with colleagues from different culture. They have a different way to communicate, even if the business is the same, because, of course, we are all part of the same group. But I also had to do an exercise to understand how to approach them, how to build a relationship, how to become an entrusted advisor for them. This is more or less what happened in the last 10 years.
But you mentioned that you started in private practice and then became in-house. How was the transition? Was it a shock? Because, I never worked in in-house, but all our clients always tell us it's like being surrounded by clients that are all asking you questions. So it's like being bombarded by people that need your feedback.
Yeah, it changed, and it's a bit shock at the beginning because I was coming from private practice from an international network as DLA, so I was used to work in the same way you work, and I started to deal with an audience and with colleagues that were not legal, so I had to change the way I was advising them and try to provide advice and opinion that were understandable for an audience that it made of journalists, people of the business, marketing. And then it's who you are really bombarded because the client are all the people in the company. It means the legal function interact with all the stakeholders in the company. So it means that you have hundreds of clients at the same time, each of them with their own priorities. I've learned doing this and managing priorities when I was in private practice, so it was a really good school and gym for me, and I think it's an important part of my career, and it was really useful also to start this journey at Condé Nast. But you can feel the change when you
yeah, so it doesn't mean that you work less, maybe you work more intensively, because it's like having your client always in the room with you, because you're part of the same company. And obviously, any client means its instruction, its business as the most important aspect for the company. You mentioned a bit of the challenges of your role. Do you have any other aspect that you would pin as a challenging factor in an international role? Because as you said, you are overcasting not just Italy, but many other jurisdictions that maybe have a different cultural background. They want they want communications to be conveyed in a different manner and so on.
Yeah, of course, starting to oversee also markets with different jurisdiction means that at the beginning I had to study more, to ask for more support from external law firms in particular, because there are still some markets in Europe at Condé Nast where we do not have in-house counsel. So it is true that there are all countries of civil law, but so there are many similarities, but you know, there are also area of law like data protection, that even if we have an European regulation, then there are specificity for each market. So this is of course challenging, but because when maybe you think that the same principle apply in France or in Germany, then you find that it's not like this, and so you have to start to rebuild your advice. But at the same time, it's also a way of learning. I learn a lot also from my colleague in the UK, but also in Germany, in France. It's a way of exchanging on a daily basis.
Harmonization is always challenging, and it could be challenging also to deal with creative people. That is for sure.
This is also because, as you can imagine, they always push to do more. And when you have to explain them that you have some bad news, because what they have in mind is not exactly what they could do from a strict legal perspective, and then it's always trying to find a compromise, trying to make them happy, but at the same time protecting the company. You know, creative people have ideas. Sometimes they come saying, oh, we would like to create this a new work, starting from a protected copyright work. What could we do? You know, the restriction we have in Europe with data, it's another big issue, because being a publisher, data is a crucial asset for us. So it's a daily challenge. Try to increase our audience, but at the same time respecting user rights. So,
yeah, but that's also fascinating. And your company has been at the forefront of digital transformation in the publishing world. So I'm curious to know how this shift impacted your legal strategies in your, let's say, daily work, but also at a higher level, let's say.
No, it actually did, because when I joined Condé Nast, the company has already started this process of transformation, becoming a more digital company, starting from being a traditional publisher, where most of the revenue were coming from print and from subscription. But you know, there was a big crisis in the publishing industry, in the advertising field. So the only way to survive and to have a business that is sustainable was to try to diversify the business and the area of business in the company. So we have started to explore different areas, event organization. We have launched an e-commerce for our fashion collection. We are also playing as a talent agency. We are a content creator, not just only for ourselves, but also for the clients, because we also produce content for clients, advertising campaign. This is also interesting from a legal perspective, because it means that every time the company decided to create, to launch a new project, a new business, it meant for me to work with the business, try to understand the strategy, how to launch, and how we make it possible, also from a legal perspective. To be honest, I was lucky because I had the opportunity to see how the company changes over the years. That's why it's never boring, to be honest, and that's why I'm still enjoying being here even after 10 years.
But it's basically a different company. It started with publishing, and now we have contents, we have events, so it must be very thrilling, let's say. Of course.
More complicated, because if you think that 20 years ago, it was just selling advertising based on general terms and conditions, and that's what it was all. Now we are organizing big events. We are doing video production, series, a movie. We are producing an apparel collection. So it's really it was really diversification of the business.
New IP rights involved, formats, yeah, trademarks, designs.
It was also, I think, an opportunity for me to be more creative also
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I like that.
People think that our job is not so creative because we are more technician, but it's not because when you have the opportunity to work in a company such as Condé Nast, it is, you have many opportunity to invent, to try to figure out new solution from a legal perspective to support the business to achieve the goals. And so
and you became creative out of this necessity as well sometimes.
Exactly.
No, indeed. I love the creative role of lawyers, because in the image of non-lawyers, we are just boring professionals that need to tell clients what the law states, which honestly, I don't believe that it is our role, because anyone can read what the law states. But then, as you said, we need to find a way of balancing risks and finding a solution that enables the business to do what they do, because obviously they generate money, and you need to enable them to do their business and to generate revenues for the company. Daniela, you know that during the last year, we cannot have a podcast without mentioning artificial intelligence. It's all surrounding us. You mentioned that Condé Nast went through a digital transformation, probably a new digital transformation will happen in the coming years, because any business is going to be more and more impacted by AI. Do you see it as an opportunity, a threat? As Ellen was saying, you have IP assets that could be exploited by third parties, but at the same time, you could exploit AI. I mean, it seems twofold here.
Yeah, as a publisher and representing a publisher, I think on one side, we need to make sure that our content are protected. So this is probably the main assumption, and it's also a work that we have started doing at Condé Nast, making sure, for instance, that our content are protected both from a legal, contractual, and technical perspective, from being scraped for AI training, but at the same time, finding opportunity for having our content paid from maybe under a license. But on the other side, it is true that we need to protect our creativity, but we know that AI will be a part of our work life in the future. So it's something that we could not ignore. I think what is important for a company, not just talking about Condé Nast, but in general, it's also an issue of ethics. It means like creating an internal governance system to ensure that AI solutions are used to amplifying the potential of human intelligence, creativity, the data and the content remain property of the company, of the authors, and also that the AI systems are transparent. So it means that companies should work creating and laying down a governance adhering to transparency, security, compliance with the copyright data protection regulation. I think that this is also a process that should involve all the functions in the company, not just legal on the creative side, to put in place this kind of governance guidelines. But I think this is something that is part of our future.
Yeah, indeed. This is the aspect on which we are working more extensively for our clients. A lot of our clients are, for instance, in the fashion industry. And on the one end, they want to protect their assets, but they want to use AI, and they are concerned that their designers, their marketing colleagues, but even their HR colleagues are using AI without telling them, and with the risk of discovering that when I receive a challenge. But as you said, if a company doesn't have an internal governance, it cannot even challenge the misbehavior of employees, and if it doesn't have a governance, cannot properly exploit AI. So that is the beginning of everything. Then you work on the implementation of AI solutions, on the implementation of disclaimers. Elena is working a lot with some fashion companies on the implementation of the safeguards to avoid the applicability of the tax and data mining exemption. Maybe, Elena, you want to say a few words about that, because this is really the hottest topic on our desks at the moment.
Yeah, how to opt out your contents, but not damaging the SEO of your website. Because, of course, if you input technical measures to prevent these crawlings, on the one end, you protect your contents, but on the other, there's an issue of SEO of your website, of your contents, or of your social media. On the other hand, of course, these tools are automated tools. So if they do not, let's say, encounter a technical wall, you might say anything on your TNCs, but perhaps the measure won't be effective. And we also have case law, not in Italy, I must say, but within the EU, where they say that basically the judges found that if you say something in the TNCs, but you do not enact a technical barrier, then it's basically something that is not working and it's not enforceable against third party. It's like then not having any measure in place, and ultimately you can use that content. So it's very difficult to balance. There's little case law in Italy. We have case law on data scraping, and that's, and we could, let's say, work on that. But with respect to the new exemption and fair use of data mining after the copyright directive, we will need to see what will be the approach of the judges, also in light of the new pieces of legislation that Italy is trying to propose as well. So that's fascinating, I must say.
This is an exercise that we have started to do, including a language in the TNC to prevent scraping, trying to understand a way to make it enforceable, because it's not just put in the language, otherwise it works like a notice, but it's not really in place, as you were saying. So it's a daily challenge, because you have to protect, but at the same time find a way to explore and set up process in the company, making sure that when it uses, it's fully transparent.
No, indeed. We always say that in our practice, we need to reinvent our business at least every 2-3 years, because it's going so quickly, while there are probably other sectors that are more static, where more or less you can consolidate your knowledge. Daniela, this chat has been really interesting. Hope we're going to have other similar chats in the coming years, because as you said, your business is changing rapidly. So maybe in 2 years, you're going to talk about something completely different from what we've been tackling today. Thanks again for your time, and let's chat soon.